Breaking news into the WBZ newsroom. Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Rachel Rollins is resigning.
This week, we received the welcome news that Rachel Rollins, a radical...
Now to Massachusetts, where the U.S. District Attorney has just resigned from her...
If you haven't heard, the U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts, Rachel Rollins, announced her resignation this week amid the release of two ethics reports from federal watchdogs. An AP article put it this way: it's exceedingly rare for a U.S. attorney to resign amid ethics concerns, and Rollins' move is an embarrassment for the Justice Department under Attorney General Merrick Garland. But what about the Boston Globe? What about the Boston Herald? Are they embarrassed? Even if you have heard about Rollins' report, I'll bet there's something that you haven't heard, and that's that both of those newspapers, the Boston Globe and the Boston Herald, are at the heart of Rollins' scheme to meddle in a political campaign. If you take those newspapers out of the equation, her entire scheme vanishes. And that's what we're here to talk about.
They say there's no good news.
No good news.
So, Rachel Rollins was found to have committed numerous ethics violations, from having people cover travel expenses that they shouldn't have paid for, to soliciting ball game tickets, to attending a political fundraiser featuring First Lady Joe Biden. A lot of that information is well covered, and it continues to get coverage. But what we're here to talk about is the part of the story where Rollins attempted to interfere in an election. And more importantly, what we're here to talk about is the part of that story that is getting virtually no coverage, which is how she pulled that off. Check out this clip from WCVB5.
But her legacy will forever be tarnished by a scathing federal investigation calling her actions on the job an extraordinary abuse of authority. The lengthy report says she tried to influence last year's district attorney race in Suffolk County and then lied under oath about leaking documents. She was backing Boston City Councilor Ricardo Arroyo in the race, and the investigation found that she leaked damaging information about his opponent, Kevin Hayden, who ultimately won. In a text to Arroyo, she wrote, "Keep fighting and campaigning. I'm working on something.
Working on something. Who are you working with? So, an article in the Boston Globe, which can't get enough of running stories about this whole Rollins situation, says this in one article. Quote, "Investigators found a series of flagrant, willful ethics violations, including leaking information to the news media and attempting to stir up negative stories about Suffolk prosecutor Kevin Hayden, who was running against Boston City Councilor Ricardo Arroyo for the post she once held. Perhaps most damning was her leak of a Justice Department document that implied Hayden was under investigation for his handling of a case involving an MBTA police officer and then lying about her involvement to investigators while under oath." End of quote. Rollins lied to investigators? Who else lied? So, let me provide some background. Rollins was serving as the Suffolk DA when President Biden nominated her to be U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts. She was sworn in as a U.S. attorney in January 2022. So then Massachusetts Governor Charles Baker Jr. appointed Kevin Hayden to finish the remainder of Rollins' DA term. And Hayden then later decided that he was going to run for a full DA term. So the OIG report found that Rollins used her position to influence the outcome of Hayden's primary election for that DA race. And then she attempted to damage his reputation after he won the primary because she wanted Ricardo Arroyo to win, a man she describes as her friend. So, a central part of Rollins' election interference and smear campaign revolves around her leaking information to journalists at the Boston Globe and the Boston Herald. And what's interesting is the way that this is being covered. It's actually almost unbelievable, at least to me, the way that this is being covered. Because election interference used to be a big deal. Clearly, it's still a big deal in government, but it used to be a big deal in media as well. And granted, to a lesser degree, but reputational damage was also a big deal, especially within media, which is why it's so wild to me that there's no focus on the role that these journalists played in Rollins' scheme to interfere in an election and to smear the reputation of a political candidate. Here's an example of how the media element of this whole thing just gets glossed over in reports about what Rollins did. First, we have CBS Boston.
Is accused in reports of trying to sabotage Hayden's campaign by leaking information to news outlets that he could face a federal investigation in a police misconduct case. According to the report, Arroyo told Rollins that a public announcement of such an investigation would be the best thing that could happen for him at that moment. But Arroyo sees it differently.
There's absolutely no follow-up or interest on the point that these people needed, or Rollins' scheme required, a willing platform to get this information out there. But here's the second one. This one from WBZ, CBS Boston.
The IG is exceptionally harsh in their condemnation of her conduct.
Equally harsh was the special counsel's report that blasted Rollins for meddling in the Suffolk County District Attorney's race, calling her actions among the most egregious transgressions of the law and an extraordinary abuse of her authority. That case has been referred to the president for appropriate action.
Once again, no follow-up, no interest in the fact that this scheme, this egregious scheme by Rollins, requires willing participants in the media. Now, to be clear, it is a reporter's wet dream to have a confidential source in a high-ranking office, not to mention that that source is the top federal prosecutor in a state. And as a journalist, there is nothing wrong with using information if it's true, believed to be true, and you as the journalist, you know, are on the up and up in how you got that information and how you use it. And I think that's why it's so easy for that part, for the media's role in this story to be so easily glazed over, is because there's really no story there in what the journalist did in just receiving the information. If that's what happened, that a journalist just received leaked information. But given how widely reported this story is, how widely covered it is, I'll bet you won't find the names of those journalists involved. The Boston Herald, the Boston Globe, they've even done multiple articles, as I said, on Rachel Rollins. It was their journalist, and they've referenced the entire situation, the articles being written. Even they haven't named the journalists. But we're gonna get into that. So, a major part of the findings that Rollins interfered in an election revolves around three Boston Globe articles that were published within 4 days. And this was only about a month before the primary election for that district attorney role. Now remember, Rollins wanted her friend Arroyo to win that primary election. So on July 25th, Rollins reached out to a Boston Globe associate editor. There was a 17-second call. Investigators believe that the editor and Rollins probably didn't connect at that point. But later, the associate editor called Rollins back, and that call lasted a minute and 45 seconds. Then the Globe reporter, which from this point forward, when you hear the Globe reporter, it is this same person. The Globe reporter calls Rollins that evening, and they talked for over 43 minutes. So about 2 weeks later, on August the 6th, there will be an article that is published by the Boston Globe that is co-written this Globe reporter, and another Globe reporter. And that August 6th Boston Globe article that will follow is key to so many things that will happen afterwards and in the findings that Rollins interfered in the election. So, in this 2-week period between the July 25th phone calls and the August the 6th article, Rollins and Arroyo are texting back and forth about this article, what's going to be in the article, and it's clear from the OIG report that both of them are in contact with the Boston Globe reporter. On August 1st, just a few days before this article, Rollins sends the Boston Globe reporter a detailed text message with like 10 detailed points about Hayden and the questions that the reporter should be asking and etc., basically helping to frame his article. The next day, the Globe reporter asked Rollins if they can talk because he wanted to bounce a few things off of her from, quote, D.A. Hayden's response to our questions. The reporter is talking to Rollins and he says, these are our questions. Then, shortly after that, Arroyo checks in with Rollins to see if she's talked to the reporter. And she says, you know, no, basically we're going to talk tomorrow. That would be August the 3rd. So, August the 3rd comes, Rollins talks to the Globe reporter for over 43 minutes. Now, if you haven't already realized, that is highly unusual for a U.S. attorney to have this much time and interest invested in one reporter's article, let me assure you, it is. But nonetheless, it's still August the 3rd. This Boston Globe reporter just had this long 43-minute conversation with Rollins. He contacts her office a few hours after their conversation, and this time, he's asking Rollins' executive officer, which is the person who handles the public affairs, the person that you would contact for comments. He asked the executive officer for an official quote from Rollins. And he tells her about this article and he's explaining what he's working on and how he would like input from the U.S. attorney. So the executive officer sends the request to Rollins, who says, quote, I don't believe I would want the USAO making a comment on any of this, which is separate and apart from me saying anything, end quote. So the executive officer seems to understand that Rollins must have already talked to this reporter. So the executive officer gets back to the Boston Globe reporter and says, quote, I believe you spoke with her, question mark. This appears to catch the Boston Globe reporter off guard. He turns around and he texts Rollins. And he says, quote, I wanted to double check one thing in terms of our communication. As agreed, our discussion has been off the record. As I mentioned, I sent a note to the executive officer to ask for comment generally about the law enforcement investigations that initiated under you as DA and were inherited by Hayden. The executive officer responded, I believe you spoke with her? I haven't told anyone we spoke because it was off the record. I haven't responded to the executive officer, and I want to make sure I'm not getting my lines crossed and violating confidences. End of quote. Rollins replies to the Boston Globe reporter and said that she told her executive officer that she spoke to him, quote, for a second, and told her that he was going to call to officially ask for comment for something on record. She then suggests that he uses the wording sources close to the Rollins administration. So the next day, the Boston Globe reporter contacts the executive officer again, giving her some additional scope about what his article is about, telling her some things Hayden has said, and he tells her, let me know if U.S. Attorney Rollins wants to add anything on the record. Again, the executive officer forwards the request to Rollins, and again, she returns to the Boston Globe reporter saying Rollins had no comment. That was August the 4th. Now, on August the 5th, one day before the article, this key article, Rollins posts a tweet about the Breonna Taylor case. If you'll remember, Breonna Taylor was the woman that police killed in her own apartment. Rollins' office wasn't working on that case or involved in that case, but she tweeted as if she was making a general comment about prosecuting corrupt police officers. So after Rollins makes this tweet, she texts her executive officer and tells the executive officer to point the Boston Globe reporter to the tweet for him to use in the article as like a general statement of her opinion on prosecuting police. So the following day, boom, August 6th, big day. The Boston Globe published the story about Hayden. Now this story was about a case that came into the DA's office while Rollins was still the DA. And it involved a transit police officer who allegedly pulled a gun on a man during a traffic dispute, and then the transit police essentially trying to cover it up. And the premise of the article was that when Rollins was DA, you know, she was on it and she was pursuing an investigation. The article even says that Rollins, quote, cast a critical eye on the actions of law enforcement. So she's like this tough on police crime prosecutor. But Hayden not only seemed, quote, far less eager to pursue the case, according to this Boston Globe article, he took $225 in campaign donations from the transit officer and the transit officer's attorney in this case, just days after the attorney announced that Hayden's office wasn't pursuing charges. So essentially, the Boston Globe reporter is suggesting pay to play, quid pro quo, $225. He also goes on to highlight personnel changes that Hayden made and how hollow the special prosecution's office was under Hayden at this point. The special prosecution's office is the office that would be handling those type of police cases. Mind you, the OIG report shows that this angle and framing, the direction that this article took, is set in place by Rollins. Meanwhile, in this article, guess what the Boston Globe reporter goes on to say? Quote, a spokesperson for the U.S. Attorney's Office said Rollins declined to comment. But in a tweet posted on Friday, in response to the Breonna Taylor case, said, when district attorneys fail to prosecute police accused of wrongdoing, it erodes the public trust. End of quote. Folks, I do not understand. Perhaps some media professor will reach out to me. But I do not understand how this could possibly be acceptable at the Boston Globe. For a journalist to coordinate an article with a source and create a phony paper trail as if he attempted to get a comment and then to report that the source had no comment is pure deception. And I don't believe that any newspaper of that stature would stand behind this as a truly reputable process. Yes, not revealing your sources, saying it's a confidential source, that's one thing. But this journalist could have proceeded with this article without running cover for Rollins. He did not have to mention attempting to get a comment at all, and his article would have still had the same impact. The story would not have changed. This reporter was reporting on an alleged cover-up, and essentially more cover-ups were stacking up all the time. Because he was covering for Rollins, and then the Boston Globe appeared to be covering for him by releasing articles about how Rollins leaked information to their newspaper, but not mentioning the reporter or the shady business he was conducting. For example, in one article, after the Rollins reports had been released, there was a part of the article where they're discussing Arroyo's response. And it said Arroyo noted that his race against Hayden suffered from a number of illegal leaks from different locations. The Boston Globe article goes on to say that, quote, a spokesperson for the Boston Globe, which had published several stories that were discussed in the report, said in a statement, in the scope of our reporting, we regularly talk to officials at all levels of government. We stand by our reporting. Joe Dwinell, executive editor of the Boston Herald, said in a statement, we stand by our journalism and anything more we have to say will be in the Herald. Oh, You want us to turn our attention to the Herald? So glad you asked. We're gonna get there. But before we do, let me just point out how odd and ridiculous it is that a Boston Globe article is referring to an unnamed spokesperson from the Boston Globe talking about the Boston Globe. At least the Herald statement actually had a name attached to it. Nonetheless, in this Boston Globe article, there are three writers in the byline. There is no way, at least in my mind, that three journalists that have any idea what they're doing researched and wrote this article and didn't find the detail relevant that there was a Boston Globe reporter that was running cover for Rollins. Furthermore, you may say, well, the editors may not have realized, you know, what this reporter was doing. And I would say, well, one thing's for sure, they definitely know now because it's listed in detail in the OIG report, which they have posted on their website and have invited others to read in full. And furthermore, think back, it was the associate editor that Rollins spoke to first before the Globe reporter contacted Rollins. Therefore, that associate editor should have found it odd that Rollins would have reached out, but then suddenly it appears that the reporter contacted her office but couldn't get a response or a comment from her. Are you buying that? So, who is this reporter listed in the OIG report, the nameless Boston Globe reporter? Well, the three articles that are listed as relevant, key, actually, in the Rollins case, have two bylines. All three of them have two bylines. Evan Allen and Andrew Ryan. The OIG report refers to the journalist as a he. Evan Allen is a woman. Andrew Ryan is the only he listed on the article. So after that first article, the August the 6th article, Rollins congratulated the Boston Globe reporter for the phenomenal article, and he told her that they were still digging, perhaps referring to his co-writer, and they were going to do a follow-up. So then on August 8th, Evan Allen, the female journalist, and Andrew Ryan, still the only he listed in the duo, published another article about Hayden. Then on August 10th, the same two published a third article about Hayden. Now, we are well within the 30-day window of this primary election. And this third article, this one is reporting how the MBTA Transit Police called for a special prosecutor to investigate two transit officers involved in the alleged cover-up of this gun incident. And this article, written by the Boston Globe reporters, in their words, this was, quote, signaling a lack of confidence in Hayden's handling of the case, end quote. Once again, for those of you who may not follow the inner workings of journalism too closely, this is territory, especially opinion statements like that, signaling a lack of confidence, that many newspapers, traditionally speaking, would not be treading into before an election. However, this one, the Boston Globe, well, they did. And the day that this third article was published, Rollins contacts this same Boston Globe reporter again and gives him more advice on where to look for more information about Hayden. Meanwhile, using the first article, the August the 6th article, and framing it in what appears to be this growing interest in these developments in this transit police case, Rollins goes and starts, and yes, she does specifically reference the August the 6th article when she attempts to do this. Rollins goes and starts the process of getting herself and her office recused from a case involving Hayden. Now, that's a whole different chapter, and we're not gonna get deep into that. But the reason that you need to know about it and the reason that she did it was, according to the OIG report, to make it appear that there was either this investigation that was underway or an investigation was about to be launched into Hayden due to growing interest around these Boston Globe articles, particularly the first one. Remember, this is all happening during election season. Now, let's jump over to the Boston Herald and how they got involved. On August the 31st, now it's just days before the election, Rollins gets a recusal memo that's recusing her from working on any matters involving Hayden's handling of this transit police case. The next day, September 1st, she gets a recusal letter recusing her entire office from working on matters involving this case. This is where the Boston Herald reporter gets involved. On August 31st, the day that Rollins was recused, she initiates an off-the-record meeting with the Boston Herald reporter via text message. But he's busy and he says he'll call her, but he doesn't. So ultimately, they don't connect until September the 2nd. On September the 2nd, their call was about 17 minutes. Within an hour, this Boston Herald reporter is reaching out to a law professor who had written a letter to Rollins calling for an investigation of Hayden. Now, this law professor, when interviewed by the OIG, told the feds that he didn't know this reporter before these interactions. So how the Boston Globe reporter knew about the letter, you know, that's resourceful. We'll say this resourceful reporter found out about this letter that was written to Rollins calling for an investigation of Hayden. So eventually the Boston Herald reporter and the law professor connect. And just like with the Boston Globe reporter, afterwards, this Herald reporter contacts Rollins' office instead of her. Now, mind you, he's just talked to her and he seeks comment from the executive officer. So the executive officer told him, "I cannot confirm or deny any investigation about Hayden," but warned him to use common sense and be careful that his source was not trying to influence the election. This is coming from Rollins' own executive officer. And according to the executive officer, the Herald reporter responded with word to the effect of, "I'm glad I called. I feel like you talked me off the ledge." Meaning that the Herald reporter realized at that point what was likely happening. So in addition to reaching out to Rollins' office, the Herald had also made an attempt to get a comment from Hayden's office and basically got the same response. Like, "This is questionable that you're pursuing this story 3 days, or, you know, you have a source who's dropping this information on you 3 days from the primary election." So ultimately, the Herald didn't run this story about Rollins' recusal and, you know, the implication of what that meant for an investigation into Hayden before the primary. So September 6th came. Hayden won the primary. Now, on September 9th, 3 days after the primary, keep in mind that Hayden is still a political candidate. Rollins and the Herald reporter had about a 15-minute conversation. She later texts him photos of the law professor's letter, some other information about internal DOJ deliberations, and photos of the office-wide recusal letter. And in the text, she stated, "You cannot leak the document." In the OIG report, the investigators asked Rollins why she told the Herald reporter that it was okay to quote from the recusal document, but not leak the document. Her response was, quote, "Yeah, I think I don't know. I don't have an answer to that." She may not have an answer, but the OIG report offers an answer. A recusal memo is considered non-public sensitive DOJ document in instances where, as here, the case is uncharged or the existence of an investigation is unknown. And the OIG report goes on to explain that after the case has been charged or, you know, an investigation is publicly confirmed, then, you know, a U.S. attorney's office will basically get instructions that the recusal memo is now intended, you know, to be public. But the U.S. attorney's office receives that instruction, not makes that decision. So anyway, on September 11th, the Herald reporter, playing the same game as the Boston Globe reporter, doubled back to the executive officer saying he had gotten more information on how the DOJ approved a office-wide recusal. And he asked her if there was anything he should know about. And he went on to read directly from the recusal document, which caused her to ask him like some questions about the timing of the document, like what's the date on it, those type of things. So the Boston Herald reporter taps into his source, contacts Rollin, and gets these dates that the executive officer is requesting. And ultimately, the executive officer claimed not to have provided a comment, which wasn't necessary since the Boston Herald reporter was just running cover for Rollins anyway. And shortly after he requested comment, his article was published that same day. Within minutes of publication, this is according to the OIG report, Rollins texts Arroyo, who replied he was absolutely thrilled. Also within minutes of publication, Rollins texts her staff with a link to the article stating WTF. She goes on, when was the office contacted about this? And why wasn't I called? How are they quoting things? And basically the first assistant told her that it was because she was recused, which they were all recused. And the first assistant told the OIG investigators that during this time that Rollins is apparently outraged and trying to figure out what's going on, she never mentioned that she had been in contact with this Herald reporter. When investigators asked her why she didn't tell the staff that she talked to the reporter and actually gave him the memo, over and over they asked her why she didn't mention that detail. Her answer was, I just didn't. And this article was one that helped cement the OIG's finding that Rollins was working to damage a political candidate's reputation. And the entire premise of this article was to make it appear to the public that there was momentum growing around this whole investigation of Hayden. And as with the Boston Globe articles, it was the same cover running for Rollins. The reporter noted that Rollins' spokesperson declined to comment, which technically is also what the spokesperson said. There was no comment officially provided from the office, yet Rollins did eventually admit that she provided the Boston Herald reporter the document. So who is the Boston Herald reporter? It's really not hard to figure out, because in this case there's only one name on this story, and that's Sean Philip Cotter. Like the Boston Globe, the Boston Herald has run numerous pieces about the Rollins reports, and they've glossed it over, didn't report the trickery and how their reporter went above and beyond to basically build an article all around information provided by Rollins, but then to pretend that she didn't comment. They didn't bother with that, I guess, apparently insignificant minor detail. So there you have it. But in the case of Sean Philip Cotter, who wrote an article that was considered by the OIG report to have been part of an effort to damage the reputation of a political candidate, he has left the Boston Herald recently. And guess where he went? To the Boston Globe, where he now covers the police department. So maybe there's no story there. Maybe that's just how journalism works in Boston. Maybe it's how it works other places. Well, I believe I've done enough talking for one occasion. So, as usual, I will not tell you what to think, but I will tell you what to think about. Until next time, peace. If you enjoyed this podcast and you would like to show some love, you can find the Cash App and PayPal details wherever you clicked into this podcast. And if you would like to show your love in another form, please subscribe and share. As always, any and everything is appreciated. Till next time.